This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Coming up on today's show, we'll hear about the work and the mission of the Women's Fund of the Greater Cincinnati Foundation. First up, in her more than 40 years in broadcasting, Cokie Roberts has won countless awards, including three Emmys. She's been inducted into the Broadcasting and Cable Hall of Fame and was cited by the American Women in Radio and Television as one of the 50 greatest women in the history of broadcasting. Currently a contributor to Morning Edition, in addition to her work for NPR, Cokie's a political commentator for ABC News. She'll be the featured speaker next month at the Women's Fund of the Greater Cincinnati Foundation's A Conversation With event. She joins us this afternoon, and you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Cokie, good afternoon.
Hi, how nice to be with you.
Likewise, and Cokie, it's interesting, your family, you came from a family that was very dedicated to public service. Your father was a member of Congress, he was House Majority Leader, your mother was a member of Congress, she was also an ambassador. So I have to ask you, what was it like growing up in that family?
Well, as my sister, who was also a politician, always said, we didn't know what it was like to grow up in any other family. So, for us, it was just completely normal. But it was fun. We had spirited discussions, as they say, around the kitchen table. But we also had lots of wonderful American leaders in our home. And so it was a great education growing up.
Who were some of the American leaders you got to meet?
Oh, all of them, from that time frame. I mean, the people who were in the House and Senate at the time were extraordinary men. They really were of a different caliber than the people who are there now. It's not just that we old fogies are sitting around saying, oh, in the good old days, it used to be much better. It actually was better. And so it was people like Jack Kennedy and Jerry Ford and Hubert Humphrey and Sam Rayburn and Lyndon Johnson. I mean, they were all good friends.
How much did your father and your mother helped shape your view of Congress and how it works?
Oh, totally, completely. First of all, I know more about it than I even know I know, even at this advanced age. But also, I have a respect for it. I think the founders had it right, that the institutions that they created are good institutions. And my father always said about the House of Representatives, it's a collection of ordinary men at the time called upon to do extraordinary things. We've come upon hard times in recent years in terms of all of that, but it is an institution that I do admire greatly and respect, and I think that people who are willing to put themselves out and get into the public arena are brave souls and have, for the most part, are doing it for all the right reasons. Whether you agree or disagree with their policy proposals, their personal reasons for doing it tend to be to try to serve the public. And Mark, I write history books, and so I have spent a lot of time sort of studying the creation of these institutions and seeing how they operated in the early days of our republic and then seeing how they didn't operate during the build-up to the Civil War and the time of the war. And so I feel like I know these institutions awfully well.
So did you feel like you got an insider's view because of your father? You got to see things?
Of course.
What kinds of things did you see?
Well, I mean, everything. I mean, we basically grew up in the Capitol, and so you were very much just part of the scene.
Did you ever think about going into politics, Cokie?
Sure, I did, and actually, I feel quite guilty that I never did. But I met my husband, Steve, when we were 18 and 19, between our sophomore and junior years of college, and he always, from the time he was like 9 years old, was going to be a journalist. So it would have been awfully hard on him if I had gone into politics. But as I say, I've always felt guilty about it. I'm the only member of my immediate nuclear family, original nuclear family, that did not run for Congress. Now, they didn't all win. The only person who never lost an election was my mother. But You know, I feel that the way I've kind of tried to make up for that is to try to tell listeners and viewers and readers what government is doing, and try to inform voters so that at least it's part of the picture.
So you thought about it. You felt guilty about it.
I didn't sit around and say I'm going to run. I just was it in my mind that would be something to do at some point. Sure, but I never beyond a fleeting thought. Never thought. You know, there never, was no organ. You know,
never even never, dabbled in it. Eh?
No dabbling.
So how did you get your start in journalism?
Oh, you know, it was the dark ages, and so it was all just so irrelevant to anything today. But I came out of college and got a job through the College Placement Service, of all things, with a television production company here in Washington, and they had had for many years, they had had a show on the air. This was in the era when you had to have X number of hours of public service programming in order to have a broadcasting license. And they had had a program on for years called Teen Talk, and I had been on it as a teenager, in fact. And it had more than run its course. But the station wanted, which was the local NBC affiliate here, wanted the production company to come up with another program. And so they did, and it was something called Meeting of the Minds, which was a conversation between American public figures and foreign journalists, of whom there are, of course, so many in Washington. And I was the moderator. I was the host. I was 21 years old. And it was the lead-in to Meet the Press. So by the time I became anchor of Sunday morning many decades later, I felt like I'd just gone full circle.
We're talking with Cokie Robertson. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can also email your questions and comments to talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Cokie, what would you say is the most memorable thing that's ever happened to you in your journalism
career? Oh, I have
no
idea.
No idea? So much has happened?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, you know, the great privilege of being a journalist for these many years is that you really are an eyewitness to history, and you get to see all kinds of wonderful things. And sometimes, you know, you'll be when this Pope was elected, sitting, you know, up on top of a building in Vatican City and freezing to death, and it's pouring rain, and there are all these people in St. Peter's Square with umbrellas. It's absolutely freezing, and everybody's just staring at a chimney. And I thought, who would do that? Who would come stand in the pouring rain and stare at a chimney? And then
you're watching for the white smoke, right, or the black smoke, right?
Right. And then I thought to myself, you jerk, you know, you get to do this all the time. You get to be in a place where history is happening. And these people have this one opportunity. And so I really am aware that this is a very great privilege.
Yeah, and you do a lot of political commentating, and I've always thought that being a political commentator or an analyst or just reporting politics in general would be one of the tougher jobs in journalism, especially during campaign season with all the candidate events and all the late night events that go on. I mean, how challenging is that aspect of your
it's
job?
It's physically very challenging. It's still even now physically challenging, because even though I'm not out traipsing around with candidates, you know, we're having all of these highly contested primaries. Another one's, you know, more today. And of course, your primary coming up next week. And then it's, you know, late nights and early mornings. It's not a whole lot of sleep.
Do you think we're better or worse off in today's 24/7 instant news environment where everyone is a reporter? And is it easier or harder to be a journalist in this day and age?
I think it's probably harder in a lot of ways, but I like everything else, it has its huge pluses and minuses. I mean, I think it's wonderful that we get information all the time. I think it's terrific that people who are at home in their pajamas can, you know, look at reporting and find mistakes and be able to correct them in real time and that kind of thing. I think that it's a real problem in the sense that if you're constantly automatically expected to be filing or tweeting or whatever that you're not reporting. And so the reporting becomes awfully derivative. And that's a huge problem because, of course, people who are reporters are hired to actually do the reporting and because they're good at it and they're interested in it and they're curious. And if you're having to spend all of your time trying to post something instead of actually going out and talking to people and listening to people, it makes the quality of the reporting less effective.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. And let's speak with Mort. Hi, Mort.
Hi. Good afternoon. Yeah, I'd like to ask Cokie. She's met so many people in politics. She and her family were so embedded in politics. I wondered if she has ever met presidential candidate John Kasich. And I'd like to ask her if she has an opinion as to why there is no one in the media on any any network even guest on a TV show who has asked John Kasich about his term as a Wall Street investment banker with the Lehman Brothers during the two terms of George W. Bush, and why that is never mentioned at all. And it should be. Other people's background and experience have been mentioned as presidential candidate, but it seems like John Kasich's Wall Street background is just taboo to be mentioned by anyone anywhere in the media, whether on a political show or...
Okay, Cokie.
I certainly have met John Kasich. I knew him quite well when he was in Congress, and I was at that point on Capitol Hill every day covering Congress, and his energy and enthusiasm as a young congressman was really quite delightful. He was like a puppy dog running around the Capitol, and then as he became chairman of the Budget Committee under President during the Clinton administration, the two of them worked very closely together and did end up, as he says repeatedly on the campaign trail, with a balanced budget. But you know, every candidate's background is looked into, but the truth is it looked into more seriously as the possibility of the candidate's success is more seriously taken. So John Kasich has been running far behind, with the exception of New Hampshire and Vermont, in most of the polls. But with Ohio coming up next week, and with him pulling up in Michigan today, a lot more spotlights will be turned on to John Kasich.
Cokie, when you get a complaint about how a certain candidate's been covered, do you feel like you're doing your job when you get complaints from both sides?
Well, you get complaints from everybody, and basically everybody is supporting somebody else. You know, there's an axe to grind, and that's fine. I mean, that's the way people engage in politics.
We will continue our conversation with Cokie Roberts. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. My guest this afternoon, Cokie Roberts, who will be the featured speaker next month at the Women's Fund of the Greater Cincinnati Foundation's A Conversation With event. And you can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at WVXU.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Cokie, you've also written quite a few books. How did you get started as a writer, and how do you find the time to do all this?
Yeah, that's a serious question at the time. By the way, speaking of the 24/7 news cycle and the ability to have news at your fingertips all the time, in that break, I just did a quick John Kasich Wall Street search, and it's been written about in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, Vanity Fair, The Atlantic. It's been covered on CNN, the other, you know, so it's been out.
Right, it's not a great secret. Yeah.
Books. Well, I got started on writing books when an editor came to me, basically, and said, write a book. And I said, what book? And she said, oh, come on, you must have some book. And I said, actually, I don't have a book. And then she said, well, maybe there have been some talks you've given on things or something. So I started thinking about it, and I realized that I had, as I will be doing with the Women's Fund next month, I had talked to groups like the Red Cross and other groups about women in history and women who had been very instrumental in making America the country it is. And so I realized I actually did have a book, and the first one was We Are Our Mother's Daughters, which was a nice little book of essays about women's roles, and both historically and personally in terms of mother, sister, wife. And then that book became a number one New York Times bestseller. So that once that happens, the publishers want more.
Of course.
So Steve and I then wrote a book together about marriage, which is, a dangerous thing to do, but we survived it. And that came out in 2000 from this day forward, which was, again, both about our marriage and other marriages in American history and contemporary America at that time. And but that book included a chapter that I had written on John and Abigail Adams' marriage, and that got me really into the whole field of serious scholarship about women's history. And so I wrote a book about the founding mothers, the women around the time of the Revolution and the foundation of the country, and that was that came out in 2004, and then the sequel to that, Ladies of Liberty, which is about the early republic, came out in 2008. And then Steve and I wrote a little Haggadah, the Passover Seder ceremony, and I also wrote a children's book about founding mothers, and all of them, I'm happy to say, hit the bestseller list, but the publisher very much wanted a Civil War book, and with a great deal of difficulty. Oh, gosh, it was hard work. I finally did produce early last year, Capital Dames, and the paperback will come out in April for that book.
So that goes back to my other question. How do you find the time?
It's really hard. It really is hard. Fortunately, I love the research, so that's time I happily spend. And I have to tell you, Mark, what's happened now is that newspapers from the late 18th century are now online, and so you can waste days just sitting and reading, mid 19th century newspapers because they're so much fun to read. But so that's fun work, but then the actual writing it and getting it all down and all that is very, very hard work. And for this book, for Capital Dames, because I wanted it to be in the stores before the sesquicentennial of the Civil War was over, which was April 2015, I was getting up in January 2015 at 3 in the morning and writing just straight through. So it was pretty – I say those words and my stomach tenses up.
Mine too. Founding Mothers and Ladies of Liberty, what was the message that you were – trying to story that you were trying to convey with those books?
I was just trying to tell the story of these women who were incredibly essential to the foundation of the nation. And their stories had not been, in my view, adequately told. And they had never been told as a connected narrative. There's some good biographies of some of the women, but not a history book that basically tells their connected stories and their connections to the men and to the politics of the day, and as well as the other aspects of daily life in America in the late 18th, early 19th century. So it's telling a story.
513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Let's talk with David in Hyde Park. Hi, David.
Hello.
Hi, David.
Hi, Cokie. We actually kind of know each other since you're talking about history. Your brief history was Cincinnati. This is Dave Manning, and I was doing its academic.
Oh, wow. That's so funny. I spent a lot of time in Cincinnati in those years.
Yes, you did. Do you remember flying in with the questions?
Oh, I did. I had the questions, and I did all the auditions for the high schools there. I was in Cincinnati a lot of the time, and I have
I have
an honorary degree from Xavier, so I'm basically a Cincinnati citizen, I think.
Oh, well, I've just followed your career afterwards. We spent a lot of time together going over the
we
questions.
We sure did.
You making sure I didn't mispronounce some of the words in the question.
And I remember staying in the hotel. Is it a Netherlands or something?
Yeah, I think that one, yeah.
And they had a restaurant on top. And I usually, because I had to interview the kids after school for the auditions, and so I usually just sort of went and had a dinner in my room. But one night I really didn't want to do that, and I went upstairs to the restaurant and ordered what I thought was something light, and it came out flaming, and all the lights were turned, and it went around.
That's a gourmet room, I think.
Yeah, that was an embarrassing moment.
Well, I followed your career ever since we worked together back in those days.
It's nice to hear your voice again. It's very nice to hear you. I'd love to see you.
Nice to hear you, too.
Dave, thank you for the phone call. Let's speak with Nick in Coleraine Township. Good afternoon, Nick.
Yeah, good afternoon. Toki, I'd just like to say I listen to you at every opportunity, and I enjoy your comments. You're very fair and obviously have a lot of information. So,
that's very kind of you. Thank you.
My question, and maybe comment, is this electoral cycle or primary season, it seems that the more outrageous the comments that, you know, one person makes, and we all know who that one person is, the more airtime he gets. And to me, it's a little disturbing. And, you know, what do the other candidates do when, after any outrageous comment, you know, Trump gets on the morning shows, everybody talks to him, you hear the analysts make comment about it, but then they put him on an interview.
I agree with you completely. It's been he has gotten a huge amount of free media, and was doing things that nobody else has ever been allowed to do, of calling into programs and all of that. And all I can say to you is that, you know, these are profit-making institutions, as they are meant to be, and he was bringing in the audiences. I think now that there is something of a sense of overexposure, and the fact that he has said so many, as you put it, outrageous things, beginning to catch up with him. Our ABC poll that came out yesterday shows really a ceiling for him in the Republican Party of about 34%, and more unhappiness about him inside the party. The question then is, what do people do about it? Because we're at a funny place in the nominating process, and that's going to be very interesting to watch play out over the next couple of weeks. And next week, when you all in Ohio and Florida and Illinois all vote, and North Carolina, and your primary and Florida's are both winner-take-all, that's going to be a very key contest.
Koki, do you think there's a chance that none of the candidates, I think they need 1,237 delegates, is that right?
That's what they need to win on, someone needs to win on a first ballot.
You think there's a chance that, that's not going to happen, we end up with a brokered convention?
Well, it won't be brokered, but it'd be contested. There are no brokers, but it could be a contested convention, and of course now that's what the party elders are beginning to support, saying, you know, get behind Kasich in Ohio, Rubio in Florida, Cruz where he seems to be doing best, and Mitt Romney today has robocalls, you know, those automatic recorded telephone calls out in Michigan supporting Kasich. So it is a very interesting strategy. I think that it could have the effect of turning off voters big time if they think that they have exercised their right to vote and their opinions in the primaries, and then they are thwarted at the convention. That could be a big problem for the Republican Party.
What do you think of the political climate today, especially?
Oh, it's horrible.
How's it compared to what your parents? What
existed? Oh, it's horrible. It's just horrible, and everybody knows it, and everybody complains about it, but nobody really does anything about it. And the polls are taken that show that people really want civility, and that they will vote for a candidate who's more civil. Well, it doesn't look so like that right now, and both George Bush and Barack Obama ran saying they would bring a tone of civility to Washington, and voters liked that. And then they both tried and couldn't, and so it's a very difficult time right now.
So, are we stuck in uncivility from here on out?
Well, we're stuck in uncivility we're stuck in uncivility until the voters really mean it, that they don't like it. And unfortunately, what we've seen in this primary season so far is that the voters seem to be loving it.
We got an email from James in College Hill, and he says, now that people get their news from Fox and MSNBC, what do you feel is the future for pure unbiased news?
Oh, I think it's huge. Some people get their news from all kinds of outlets. I mean, it's let a thousand flowers bloom. But unbiased news is essential, because the people who actually use that information to then bias it from their perspectives still are going to the site, the sources that are producing actual facts and news, and that is essential for an informed electorate. That's why NPR does so well. It's because people are desperate for good information, thorough information, and that's where you can get it best.
Now, Carol emailed, says she loves listening to you.
I'm so glad to hear from
you.
A woman.
she says she loved your founding mother's book, and
good.
That she visited the memorial in Alaska to your father.
Well, I haven't, and I'm glad that she did. My father was lost in a plane crash, we assume, in Alaska in 1972. He was campaigning for a freshman member of the House, Nick Begich, and the plane was lost and never found, lo these many decades later. And so it has been a long, long time of uncertainty. But the state of Alaska did open what I've seen pictures of, a very beautiful visitor center, the Begich Boggs Visitor Center, there at Portage Pass, and so that's at Portage Glacier. So that's probably where she went, and that is quite, from what I've seen, a quite beautiful and informative place. I don't have any interest in doing that. I see Alaska as the place that took my father.
Mm-hmm. Give us a preview of what you're going to be talking about when you speak at the Women's Fund of the Greater Cincinnati Foundation event next month.
Well, first of all, I have to tell you how much I just think that women's funds all over the country are doing just wonderful, wonderful work. It really does show you the difference between men and women's attitudes toward philanthropy. The women's funds are women getting together and saying, we can do a better job together than any one of us can do separately. And we don't care. Our names don't need to be on anything. We don't need to get any kind of ego out of this. What we're trying to do is just help the community. And what the Women's Fund Cincinnati has done is really quite remarkable, because not only have they raised that kind of money and been very instrumental in helping girls and women in all kinds of ways, but they have done incredible research to provide the data on the status of women. And that is hard, hard work to do, and it's expensive and it's time-consuming. But they've done it because once you have the data, you then know where your real problems are and what you need to address, instead of guessing at it or saying this program here looks like a good program and this program here looks like a good program. This way you can take a holistic approach to it and really understand what needs need to be fulfilled. And they've done that. And it's I'm incredibly admiring of it.
Well, Cokie, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Well, I'm delighted to be with you, and I can't wait to be with everybody else in April.
Cokie Roberts, you'll be the featured speaker at the Women's Fund of the Greater Cincinnati Foundation's 2016 A Conversation With event. That's on April 5th at Xavier University. And you can find a link to more information at WVXU.org.